Hello, this is Go Mountain Goats podcast. My name is Ez Trezida and I'm sitting in for Finlay Wild today for reasons which will become clear shortly. Just a quick roundup of recent news items in the world of mountain running. Donnie Campbell set the Munros record, so that's the continuous round of all the Munros. All human powered, so running, cycling and kayaking between them all. And he did all 282 Munros in an amazing 31 days and 23 hours and 2 minutes. And I think that knocked over a week off the previous record, which is some going. John Kelly completed his grand round, which is the classic 24-hour round of Wales, the Lake, England and Scotland, so the Paddy Buckley, and then cycle to the Lake District and run the Bob Graham, and he managed both of those under 24 hours, and then cycled to Fort William in Scotland and ran the Ramsey Round. He was behind schedule on the Ramsey Round, but did the whole thing in 130 hours on a terrifying 12 hours of sleep over the whole of the 130 hours. And so, yeah, his aim was, I think, to do it in 120 hours. So he was only 10 hours behind that. And I can't really get my head around how difficult that must have been. Math Roberts, down in Wales, broke the Paddy Buckley round. He did 16 hours 38, breaking the previous record by nearly an hour. The previous record was 17:31. Carol Morgan set the Lake District 24-hour record for the women. She broke Nikki Spinks' record of 64 hills by one. She added an extra hill and I think was really close to 24 hours. I think she was sprinting in and got in with 90 seconds to spare or something, which I know a little bit about. It's quite stressful. Holly Page broke the women's record for the Mamaw's round, running 6:03. Georgia Tinley broke the women's record for Loch Arbour Traverse, running 5:33. And Sam Alexander gets an honourable mention for missing the Rigby round record by 3 minutes, running 19 hours 36. The existing record is Paul Raystrick in 1933 from back in 2012. So hard luck, Sam. So today I'm hosting this because I'm going to be interviewing Finlay about his recent Ramsey Round record. And that's sort of appropriate because I had the record that he broke. So Finlay, welcome to your own podcast.
Hello.
And congratulations on the Ramsey Round run. That's, amazing. How did it feel? How was it?
Yeah, it was great. I'm feeling a bit nervous. Because normally I'm asking the questions, so I know what I'm going to ask.
But you're on the spot.
I mean, we've talked a lot ourselves before about the Ramsey and obviously you had the record, and I was so delighted when you were going around doing it. I remember dot watching when you were doing it, and it's just such a cool route. And like living in Fort William, it's the obvious long distance challenge.
Yeah.
And for me, I suppose I first sort of started thinking about it in probably 2016, really, when I supported Jasmine Paris on leg three on her record run.
That's the last leg.
Yeah, and the last leg, yeah. And, yeah, at the time was thinking, geez, this is, like, quite a long way for me. You know, it was like a 30K or so leg.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I can't really imagine doing three times that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've really taken my time to build up the distance. I've probably been quite slow to get up to what is now not even that long a distance compared to what some people are doing.
Yeah.
But
did you feel like getting on a bike and riding to the lake and doing the Bob Graham run straight away?
That's amazing, because I gave some support to John Kelly on his grand round on the Ramsey, again leg three, and it was just horrendous weather and it was a big day out for us. Just I don't know how he could do that on the back of everything else, the days and days of no sleep and running and cycling.
Incredible. So the first I knew of it, I knew you were intending to have a go at some point this summer, And I obviously knew that it was on your radar more generally. I remember last summer thinking like, well, you know, I might not be, like, training might not have gone absolutely perfectly, but I kind of need to break the record before Finley does, because otherwise I won't be, it'll be, you know, it'll be hard enough breaking Jasmine's record. Trying to break Finley's record will be even harder. So I remember thinking, I remember knowing then that it was on your radar. And I guess this summer has been, you know, there's always a tension, I guess, for someone who's close to the top in racing. There's a tension between like wanting to do well in races, and that historically has meant that, you know, the top people in the last couple of decades haven't really done the big rounds when they've been at their peak. And so it's cool to see you doing this, like, as a result of coronavirus, being, you know, pretty much at you're running as fast now as you ever have done, and being able to put all of that into one of the classic rounds is amazing. Can't remember where I was going with this. So I knew it was on your radar, and I knew you were planning it for some time this summer. So I wasn't surprised when I got an answering machine message, which was a little bit sheepish, like, "Oh, I've just been on the Ramsey round, and I might have broken your record." That was the first thing I knew about it. I didn't know you'd gone out. And did anyone know? Like, did you even tell Susie, or did you just sneak off in the morning and say, "I'm off for a wee run"?
Susie knew, and I think I told, like, my folks who live in Fort William, my parents, and like a couple of other folk knew, but I wasn't really telling folk about
Doogie
it.
Doogie must have known, because you'd been on a...
My friend Doogie knew, because I'd been away with him.
Yeah.
I was away on like a 3-week trip with him, and I knew that, so I'd done the Malardic round just before that trip, so I was thinking, well, at the end of this trip with Doogie, that'll be me well recovered enough.
Mm.
So I was kind of eyeing up from quite far out to see, well, when's the weather window coming? And basically on the last day of our trip, there was this weather window on the Monday. And I was like, oh. So we were driving past Fort William anyway to go back to Glasgow, where he's based.
And you'd left your car at his house.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, just let me out in Fort William a day early, and I'll be in perfect position to take advantage of this weather window.
So did you have to get the train down afterwards to pick up the car?
Yeah.
So he knew, and your folks knew, and Susie knew. And but otherwise it was kind of off the radar. You didn't have a tracker, you didn't have any support, and that's in complete contrast to how everyone else who's done a fast Ramsey has done it. You know, we've all had pacers on every leg, carrying our stuff and giving us drinks and telling us that we're great and you know, offering encouragement and if we needed it, navigation, although you know, in good weather you're not going to need navigation. I didn't need any navigation on mine, except I think when I got to, what's the one after Stobban in the Grey Corries, first one you get to there,
that's Gravine.
No,
one of the Grey Corries.
Yeah.
Stobcorry Clary.
Yes, I got there from Stobban. I'd never run up Stobban from that direction.
Okay.
And I met Jasmine and Angela on the top and just set off in the direction I thought was the right direction. Okay. They're like, "Where are you going?" I was like 90 degrees wrong or 30 degrees wrong. I was going down the wrong ridge.
Did you get some mist in off Skirl de Moor? Off the Mamores?
Yeah, but nothing so bad that you had to navigate.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it was. We did have to navigate a bit there, but it wasn't because of mist. It's just because you're following. You know, it's like you're just going on a bearing, aren't you?
Yeah. Okay.
With no path.
Yeah.
So there was a bit of navigation, but basically not really any significant navigation. Your time. You were 90 minutes faster than my time, which is amazing. So you ran. What did you run?
14:42.
14:42 compared to mine. Yeah, mine's 16:12. So you broke the record by 90 minutes. I broke it by 90 seconds, pretty much.
Oh, yeah.
So, I think it was about 90. It wasn't exactly 90 seconds, but about that. The time. I kind of geekily looked at your splits for Tranter and things like that, and worked out that I reckon you'd probably break it by about that much.
Okay.
But the big unknown for me was if you ran it unsupported, how much that would be worth. Because like you, it seemed obvious you were capable of, like on a supported round running, I would have guessed 1.5 hours faster.
Okay.
But then you ran it that much faster unsupported, and it's a real unknown how much that's worth, isn't it? Because no one ever does it. Like the rounds that people run unsupported, everyone runs unsupported.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the Paddy Buckley or the Rigby, everyone runs them unsupported, so it's difficult to know how much it's worth. The Ramsey previously, well, Bob Graham, every fast time is done really heavily supported. The Ramsey, every fast time, I suspect every time under 20 hours was heavily supported.
Only 9 under 20 hours only 9 still, people including under, me.
Yeah.
That's quite cool.
So it's like this big, it's pretty unknown how much time it's going to be worth, but it seems like it'll be worth quite a big chunk to me. Like, so you're carrying stuff, you're carrying like, starting off with like 3.5 kilos of stuff, weren't you?
Yeah.
So all your food, you didn't have any food drops.
No.
All your food, some clothes, a litre of water.
Yeah.
So that's going to be, you know, that's not going to be 3.5 kilos the whole way, but it's going to probably average like 2-2.5 kilos for the whole round, isn't it?
Yeah, it's probably it's just under 1 kilo for sort of my kit.
Yeah.
Map and your phone and thing. That's sort of enough things to make it kind of safe, but nothing else. So about 1 kilo of kit, 1 kilo of water, and 1.5 kilos of food, roughly.
Yeah, okay. So that's going to be, I mean, I don't know, there'll probably be someone who knows the formula for working out how much 1 kilo is worth per 1,000 meters of ascent, but like, 2 to 3 kilos, it's got to be worth like a couple of minutes per 1,000 meters, I would have thought.
I mean, yeah, I suppose 2 soft flasks, so I was like drinking quite a lot. You know, to get them in your race pack, you can't kind of get them in totally full, so you drink quite a bit. When you fill up, you generally don't have much water left anyway, so you drink quite a bit.
Yeah.
And then just sip on it. So, yeah, it was, but basically 1 kilo of water.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got no idea. I'm not very mathematical about that kind of thing as to how much would it have cost per 1,000 meters.
Yeah, so I think it's going to cost you per climb, but it's just going to cost you running along the flat as well, isn't it? Because, well, it's just harder running with a bag on your back. It's harder running when you're 3 kilos heavier than your normal weight.
Like I'm terrible at packing. Like I bought loads of food and bars and stuff, so I had like plenty of stuff.
Yeah.
Then like the day before, sort of getting stuff ready, and of course I always put off the actual decisions till the end, like how much am I actually going to take,
right?
And I hadn't really checked that it was going to fit in a race vest, and I had this idea to maybe use one of those what are they called, like kind of running band things. Naked one looks really good, but they're like totally sold out of
the
common
sizes.
You
didn't own one.
So I don't have one, no.
Right.
So anyway, so I had another band, but I was like, I'd probably fit in a race vest, and they're really stretchy, so mine's like a 3-litre race vest.
Yeah.
I kind of thought through it, and obviously I had like, how much did you eat on the Tranter, and how much did you eat on the Malardot range recently?
Yeah.
Actually, Tranter, I didn't quite have enough food.
Right.
So Malardot, I did have more, so I had quite a good gauge.
Yeah.
And I'm quite good at eating while running, and I knew that when I don't eat, I definitely suffer for it. So I was definitely keen to keep fueling.
Yeah.
You'd put me onto the Tailwind powder, energy powder stuff.
Yeah.
Which I know really helped you, and definitely has been good for me.
Yeah.
As a supplement to like bars and nuts and some gels and stuff.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I was pretty confident it would all fit in, and yeah. When I actually tried it on, it did. But the race pack, you know, it did feel pretty heavy.
Mm.
And it's funny because if you say, oh, my bag was 3.5 like kilos, like if you're a hill walker, you'd be like, well, that's nothing. That's the weight of the bag empty.
Yeah.
But yeah, for running fast for a long time, or for running for a long time,
it's
quite considerable. And going out, starting off at 4 a.m. out in the dark along the forestry tracks, going up Mulac, like I felt my back a wee bit, and I was like, oh, this feels quite hard, and I was going at the time I thought would be enough to get on my split. It's like an hour and 1 minute, an hour and a minute basically to get on Moolac. And I actually just made it, but it felt like quite an effort. And I was thinking, have I let the core strength stuff like slip too much? Am I going to get a sore back? What's this going to be like?
But and was that a problem, or was it all right after that?
Then it kind of settled and I got into my rhythm. It was only dark for an hour and a half, an hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And I could have the head torch off. I could see where I was going. And it's, I mean, I know the memoirs really well. So it was, yeah, I was actually taking a wee bit off the split times. So I went on a 15-hour split that was just extrapolated from longer splits. So, so maybe I would take more off on the memoirs because that suits me quite well. I know the good lines and it's a bit more technical. But yeah, I was taking a bit off and actually I just got into my rhythm and I felt okay and didn't really think too much about the bag.
Yeah. And so it's going to cost you, just going back to this, like how much does being unsupported cost you? It's going to cost you a bit in terms of weight. That's obvious. It's going to cost you a bit in terms of refueling. So like every time you want something to eat, you know, I was just able to say, give me a bar, give me a gel, give me whatever it was I wanted. That's going to cost you a little bit of time. I think probably quite a big thing is refilling your water, especially if you're adding powder.
If you're adding powder.
So how many refills did you do? Do you know?
Ooh.
Because it must be like a, if you're filling the two soft flasks, and we're adding powder to both of them.
Depends. Yeah, I had some Zeros tablets and stuff as well. Right. But
it's probably like a minute and a half per refill, isn't it?
Well, no, I was quite slick.
Okay.
Because I'd experimented before with this bag of powder and just trying to pour it into the soft flask, which was a bit, didn't really work. So I actually had the wee scoop and I'd be kind of running along. I guess I had to slow my pace a bit, but get the empty soft flask, get the top in your mouth, have it open with the powder in a jiffy bag next to it, put the scoop in, kind of all do that while jogging. So then I'd just stop at the stream and
So you had the powder in before you stopped at the stream?
Pretty much, yeah. Right. A few times it was less slick than that.
And you know those hills well enough to know exactly where you're going to be filling up.
Where I'd be getting water. And it had been a bit wetter.
Yeah.
So the streams had replenished, which was quite good.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So how many times did I fill up? I mean, you know, there's, what, three... in the Mamores, there's sort of three big fill-up spots, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then in the valley, kind of once in the valley, well, in the glen. And then I felt it was quite good for water because, well, I know the spots in the Mamores and the Grey Corries, there's enough there. And then obviously you're low level in the glen to bend, and then Benelap, it's just one hill and then you're at a stream.
Yeah.
Then two hills, then you're at a stream. Then two hills, you're at a stream. So it's quite a lot of options for water. But yeah, I must have filled up, you know, like a dozen times anyway.
Yeah. Okay. So that's going to be a big chunk of time.
And there wasn't, the one place there wasn't water actually was just before Anak Beg and the steep, like the Sphinx Ridge.
Normally
there's water there.
Yeah.
But, well, I thought there would be. Sometimes it does dry up in summer, but I thought there would be, but that was the only place where there wasn't.
I guess it's fed, there's normally like a snow plug in the gully above it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't there?
Yeah. So
or for like a long time in the spring and early summer, there's snow in that gully. Yeah. And I guess that feeds, that's what's feeding it.
And actually, it wasn't hot, which was, like, I'm in heat, I need to drink loads and I kind of suffer in the heat.
Yeah.
Like on the Malardock round, I remember the water spots are just spaced a bit more. I actually had 1.5 litres of three soft flasks.
Yeah.
And that wasn't enough to see me between fill up points.
You were getting thirsty.
I was thirsty. And,
yeah.
And that definitely cost me. But yeah, on the Ramsey, it was kind of cloudy all day basically and quite windy. So it wasn't too warm. I wore a long sleeved thermal, light long sleeved thermal, like all day.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. And so there's some obvious ways in it which being unsupported is definitely going to be quite a big chunk of time slower. But I wonder whether there are some ways in which it might be faster. Like I think overall it's definitely going to be slower for sure. But there are some advantages as well, aren't there? Like,
yeah,
you can choose when you go and choose ideal conditions much more easily than you can if it's,
yeah, I think that's,
if it's supported,
that's really big because you're, a lot of people, I think yourself probably included, like you had two main dates in the summer kind of planned where you'd say to your support, well, let's go the first day. And if the weather's bad, then we'll postpone a few weeks or a month till the second day.
On mine, I was really lucky because I actually couldn't do the first day because I put my back out. The conditions were really good. And then just by luck, conditions were really good on my second day as well. My back was good enough by then to go for it. So there's the conditions thing. You can really pick your conditions, although I don't think that, you know, I had good conditions and Jasmine, and well, Jasmine had very hot conditions, didn't she? So that maybe cost her a bit of time. But yeah, so you can pick your conditions. But I was wondering more the kind of like the state you're in running. Like, obviously, having supporters with you can be really helpful in terms of encouraging you. But I wonder whether, like, if you're on your own, do you think maybe you can get into more of that kind of flow state of like being really in the zone that might be difficult to be if you were with two or three other people on each leg?
So I think. I mean, just finishing off on the conditions thing, like, I certainly feel like for people in general doing the Ramsey and the other rounds, like, there is a thing of getting stuck doing it in suboptimal weather because that's the time you've booked off work and that's when you've got your supporters. And I was really keen to not do that and just go when the weather was optimal because, you know, that's going to be so much easier for navigation and faster and just a more pleasant kind of great day out.
Yeah.
But I also think that maybe just running unsupported like would suit me better, or like I'm not saying I'll never do something with support. Like I'm sure if I had to go on the Bob Graham, I would have support. But for like all my running's been unsupported really. When I did the Welsh 3000ers last year, so it's quite short. It's 35k. And there's two road crossings. And Colin Donnelly, in the previous record, he'd had... I don't think he had pacers in the first short bit.
Yeah.
But then the second two bits, I think he had pacers and people carrying stuff.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
But I sort of reasoned that by today's standards, that wasn't that long and I could get supplies. Like I had static support at both valleys where I could get food and water.
Yeah.
And that worked really well. And I didn't.
I mean, that's sort of short enough that it's only like a bit longer than a long hill race.
Yeah. And I sort of like had this thought, like I'd recce'd it. I'd gone down to Wales to recce it pretty thoroughly, and I knew the lines that I wanted to take, like fairly exactly.
Mm.
And I'm sure, you know, we know there's a lot of good hill runners down there who probably would. I could have drummed up support to help pace me and support me. But they might know slightly different lines, and then I suppose you have to, then it's an extra kind of thought of, well, do I trust them because they live here and their line might be better, or do I stick to my guns of my line? And even if their line's a bit faster, does the stress of that cost you something?
Like on my Ramsey, where within a minute of starting, you were like, where are you going?
Oh, yeah.
And you had a much better line for getting to the first track.
Slightly different,
than the one I'd planned. But it threw me a bit. I mean, I think it helped, but it was definitely a bit like, probably Finlay knows a better line than I do. I'll go with what he's saying. But I wonder, also, sorry, go on.
So coming back to the Ramsey, I mean, obviously, Mamors, Tranter, you know, Ramsey, I've kind of built up through them. So I do know my lines. I'm happy with them. I'd run the Tranter, like I took an hour 15 off my previous record from 2017.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, I was thinking, right, I'm really, something's clicked with me with this long distance stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's a real interesting combination. Like I'm a bit older. I just turned 36, but I was 35 when I did my Ramsey.
Yeah.
And so I'm older, but I'm more experienced with running. So my metabolism's probably changed. Just from getting older and from running efficiency.
And you've not started to get slower at the short stuff yet, it doesn't seem.
No.
You're probably at that point where, you know, you haven't started to get slower at anything really. Like, okay, maybe if you did like a 2-minute absolute speed test, you might be slower than you were at 22 or something. But any kind of distance that you normally race from like 20 minutes to 5 hours, you're as good or better at every distance as you've ever been, I would have thought.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And like, I definitely remember when I did the 2017 Toronto record, like, I faded quite a bit in the second half.
Yeah.
But this time, this year with the Toronto, I didn't. And I think, yeah, I've got a good system for eating and kind of know what works for me.
And do you think that kind of getting into the rhythm and the flow is easier if you're on your own?
So it's all cumulative, isn't it? So because I had run well on the Tranter, I sort of get this confidence, and then do you want to go out?
Yeah. Okay, go on then. We'll edit it.
Yeah, so it's cumulative. So I was feeling confident, and I was feeling, I'm not kind of bonking or dying on the second halves, and I feel like I'm feeling well, and it's going well, and I feel strong.
Yeah.
And I can push, you know, I can do a race effort on long distance. And I think that even goes back to, like, over the last few years. So last year I did, like, the Lakeland Classics. So, like, what are they, like, 35, 37K sort of races, supporting yourself, kind of out a long day out on the hill. Well, like 4 hours kind of stuff, but also some of the sky racing I'd done, like Zagama, which is so like marathon distance in the mountains, that's 4 hours and something.
Yeah.
Other stuff like that, and racing against, particularly in the sky races, racing against like a really deep field. So knowing how far basically I could push myself over that distance, I think that definitely helped.
Yeah.
And I'm getting to the flow part. so then I had the confidence that then you can push on. Which then I guess means you're out for relatively less time, so then you're able to sustain that. So it's all coming together, and I think maybe for me it's just easier running on my own. Like, I'm so used to running on my own, pacing myself.
Yeah,
getting into that flow where you're not really thinking about the time, you're just moving, and you know you're moving efficiently, and you know it's kind of appropriate for the length of the challenge you're doing.
Yeah.
And I think maybe, yeah, almost like having people like offering you stuff, because that's a natural thing as a pacer, a supporter. You don't want them to...
You want to feel useful.
Yeah, want to feel useful, but like also you want to, you know, they might be going through a tough patch, so you want to give some chat and you want to offer them stuff.
Yeah.
But in a way, because I'm not used to that like at all, like that might put me off a wee bit, or cause us, maybe not put me off, but the stress of organizing that and thinking, oh, I've got to meet this other team at this changeover to get my other food. Like, we've all heard of rounds where the support hasn't quite managed to link up and the person's had to run off with no food.
Yeah.
And so I just thought, well, I don't need that stress. I don't need the stress of people sort of knowing I'm doing it. Yeah, the other thing was people were talking about before was who will pace you? You know, how many people can you get
like locally,
kind of fast enough locally to pace? Yeah. And yeah, there's loads of folk I could rope in, but
there's not loads that could keep up for very long, though, is there?
Well, I suppose the shorter the legs you make it, the more logistically complicated it is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then, so I'd always need to carry some stuff with me in case I ran off. So,
it would be easier if you're in the lakes. You know, there's a greater density of top quality runners in the lakes, whereas here, you know, you're kind of a league ahead of everyone else, and then there's like me and maybe half a dozen other people who are about that next a couple of rungs slower, who could keep up with you for 3 or 4 hours at that pace. But there's not a lot of people to choose from.
And there's also the logistics of like getting people into there. So
exactly,
in the lakes,
there's
a lot of road crossings, and but you basically got, well, you've got after the Mamores, you've got kind of at the bridge before Ben the Lap. So off, if people went in from the train via Carrera, you've got Fursuit, and then those are the basic points.
Ones that are easy to get to.
Yeah. Otherwise, people are already having to go up Monroe Summits to wait for you.
Yeah, or bike into
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's just pacing along the track, isn't it? So there's not much point in that. Yeah. So yeah, it's definitely, it's obviously worth a big chunk of time, but there are some advantages to doing it solo. And the other thing I was thinking about it is that when I did my record, I had all these people pacing me, and I didn't think about it at the time, but then afterwards or during it, because I was so close to Jasmine's split times the whole way round, you know, there's this quite a lot of pressure that, like, well, I've set out to break this record. You know, the primary objective is to have a good time in the hills. But if I don't break the record, will I go back and do it again? Okay. And will I ask all these people to come out again and do the same thing for me that they've just done? That's like, it's a pretty big ask. And in some ways, having like a supported round is an amazing experience, because you've got like all these people giving up their weekend for you and treating you like you're kind of royalty. It's like getting married, like it's your special day and everyone looks after you. But you know, there's also the potential that you have a tantrum and everything goes really wrong and like a bad wedding, I guess. And you know, like, because I was so close to Jasmine's split times and you know, I got the record by, I think it was under a minute and a half. I think it was like 81 seconds or something. So it was like really, really close. And so if I'd missed it, you know, say I'd missed it by 30 seconds, which was totally, could easily have happened.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, like, do you ask all those people to come back and do it again? And secondly, like, any one of those pacers who made a small mistake might feel like it was their fault. Yeah, and that's a really big, it's quite a big responsibility to put on someone's shoulders.
Yeah.
When, you know, it's not their fault really, because it's down to you.
Yeah,
but they might easily feel that. And so, yeah, I can see how doing it solo is kind of attractive from that point of view.
For talking to you in the past and now, actually, like, you really had a great day out,
a real memorable day with
support. And like, I'd like to experience that on something, at some point, because that sounds like a different experience, but a great experience.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But I did like I really like the simplicity of just heading off myself, and like having, oh, that was the other thing, having done the Tranter, so the first time I did the Tranter, 2016, I'd done some 60k-ish races like Glencoe Skyline and Tromso Skyline, and done pretty well in them, but that sort of felt like my limit for distance. And so the first time I did the Tranter, I remember kind of looking vaguely to where the Ramsey goes and being like, oh no.
It's
a long way. But then, you know, I know the route better now. I mean, we did our most of Eskimo Ramsey.
Yeah.
What, four-fifths? Three-quarters?
Three-quarters, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe four-fifths. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, felt like a lot of it.
last winter, yeah. So, and I've supported stuff on it. So I knew it better. But like this last Tranter, so in the summer, July, I think, I really remember looking down and going, I could kind of visualize like coming off the Memoirs and still feeling quite good.
Right, yeah.
And then, okay, then it's a relatively short, it's like 10K, isn't it, down to to bend the lap.
Yeah.
And so I was starting to visualize it and have it in my head.
Mm.
And then I was thinking, well, it's only going to be, what's it, another 30K distance-wise on the Tranter.
Yeah.
And maybe 6 hours, maybe a bit less.
Yeah.
It ended up being a wee bit less for me.
Yeah.
So I was sort of thinking, I can imagine still having stamina for that and being able to carry enough food for that. And I'll be going a wee bit slower, so hopefully that'll all work out.
But amazingly, you were going faster than on your previous Memoirs round.
Yeah, generally, I had not much. I had a wee look at the splits again. So the 15-hour split time, it felt reasonable because... Yeah, it was slower than my Tranter, recent Tranter, but generally a wee bit faster than my previous Tranter.
Right, So so this summer, obviously, you've not been racing, and so you've been able to focus on doing all these longer rounds and FKTs and stuff. And it seems to me that, like, well, you've also had, like, a ton of time off work, so you've been able to focus on stuff. So what were you planning to do before coronavirus put that in.
Yeah. So yeah. So Jeopardy. The Ramsey's been on on my radar for years, like we were saying. And actually, I had this plan that this year I was going to do sort of consolidate. So last year I did pretty well in some short and medium length stuff, and there was a few records that I was really keen to get back and have a look at, like Arica Alps record. I narrowly missed that in not ideal weather last year, and the Ben's of course always there. It'd be good to do a big PB on the Ben. Jura I was quite keen to go back to because I haven't been for a few years, so I need to keep my memory of the race route up.
Yeah,
so I was quite keen to get back to Jura. So I was 3:05 is my record for 3:05 something. I was like, I wonder how close, how much could I take off that? How close to the three could I get? So I was sort of planning to do that kind of stuff this year, and then next year do long stuff and do the Ramsey. Because I suppose I was worried that doing longer stuff was just going to knacker me and slow me down for, potentially for a month or two after an attempt. But as it happened, of course, there were no races, and we were really lucky up in the Highlands. There was hardly any cases of coronavirus, and my work initially, with lockdown, kind of assumed GP work would be really busy. So I'm a locum, so I work in different practices. But actually, because things were just on emergency footing and there weren't that many cases here, it actually wasn't it wasn't bad here, and it wasn't actually that I wasn't in as much demand as I thought I might be work-wise.
And you'd taken off a load of time to go to Norway and
and I had some time off planned to so we had a Norway ski trip that was canned at the last minute, and I had some time planned kind of in August and September, so I had all this time and no races, and so initially, of course, we weren't allowed in the hills, so I was doing quite a lot of low level, just, I don't know if it's a speed work, but just kind of distance. And for a while I got quite enthused about that and was doing some speed and distance just on tracks, low level, and quite long runs with my one a day exercise. But then, I found my motivation really fluctuated, because you didn't know what was, at the start it was changing so quickly, you didn't know what was happening 1 week to the next. And so I had some days weeks where I didn't do that much either. But then, of course, the restrictions eased and we were allowed to go out. And I was like, right, well, this is definitely going to be my season to get on some of these FKTs, some of these records that I've done quite a few of them, but I'm keen to consolidate on them. And I really built up through them. The other thing, I suppose, is I came into running from being a climber and a hill walker and just loving being out in the mountains. And, I've always continue being in the mountains, but I think when there are so many good races on, there is a tendency to pick loads and loads of races, and it was really nice actually to not have that and to be like, well, I can just go to the hills, like Anchelic, for example, is such an amazing hill. I mean, that's top three, top five of most iconic Scottish mountains, Scottish Munros. But I'd only done it once, kind of in the mist.
Right.
So I've been and done that again in good weather.
I've never done it.
Yeah, it's great. You should definitely go do it. We should go there on the skis, actually.
Yeah. That sounds good.
So then I built up, and of course staying local was really key as well with COVID. What did I do? I was doing some efforts uphill, on Skua of Aim. And last year I'd done this, the classic Ring of Steel, so not the race route from Kinlochleven, but basically the basic loop starting and finishing in Glen Nevis. And I'd done 2 hours and 1 minute and 20 seconds or something last year. And I was really wanted to get that under 2 hours. So I went and did that. So that's only 15K. And then I did, Cabra Traverse is 20 under 30k, and then Mamores is about 35k, and Tranter is about 59k. Millardoc I talked about on the podcast before. Like, I really loved that. Again, I'd wanted to do that for ages, but just hadn't quite got around to it. So went and really enjoyed recce in that, and then doing that, that's about 60k as well. So I kind of felt like poised in the perfect position for a Ramsey.
So that's worked out really well, evidently. I'm curious that, so for the records that you've done this year that you already had the record on, so that's the Mamors and the Tranta are the big ones, aren't they?
Yeah.
I suppose
yeah.
Also the Ring of Steel. But I remember when you did the Mamors round, like, at that point, you were winning almost all of your races in the UK. And you're doing pretty well in Sky Races abroad. And similarly for the Tranta round when you had that. And I remember someone writing up your Mamors round and they were like totally amazed at the time you'd done for it. I can't remember who it was that wrote it up. And then this year, you took like, how long off it? 45 minutes?
About half an hour, 28 minutes or something.
Okay, so you took half an hour off a time that
off
was...
Off Mamors? Yeah.
So you took half an hour off a time that was set when you were already really good. And when... And a time that at the time people were like, wow, that's incredible. So that's, it's like pretty, not to belittle your Ramsey because it was very impressive, but I remember someone asking me when I did my Ramsey, do you think Finlay could break it? And I was like, yeah, he'd take an hour and a half or 2 hours off it.
Okay.
But I was in some ways more surprised that you were able to take big chunks of time off rounds that you'd already put good efforts in on.
Okay.
So my question is, like, at that, when you were setting those records, you were already winning races. Do you think you're fitter now than you were then? Like, if you went and raced those same races, would you be running those races? Would you be winning them by bigger margins or breaking the records? Or is it just that the ability to focus on just those rounds means that you can put more into them than you would be able to if you were also racing?
Okay.
And plus, there's a cumulative thing, isn't there? Like, every time you do a round like that, it gets there's a little bit extra, isn't there? Because you get to know it better and you can visualize where you're going to push and you know what your body's capable of. And you know, sometimes you can go a bit quicker just by doing it again and again and again.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
But you were going big chunks quicker, like, so half an hour quicker on your Mamors and like over an hour quicker on your Tranta, weren't you?
About an hour 15, yeah. And I just love those hills, particularly the Mamors for some reason. It's just amazing. And I do spend a lot of time there.
Mm.
So, I mean, it's not so much a case of knowing the lines, because I haven't really changed my lines on them for years.
Yeah.
I think it's knowing the lines
I've got a possible line in the Mamors that you haven't thought of yet.
Okay.
I'll tell you about it later.
But yeah, well, maybe that's this part of it, because there probably are faster lines, but like, I know my lines, so that's like a confidence thing that you just, like, I didn't look at the map the whole Ramsey,
and
I knew that I was hitting all the summits.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know that you know, which then you've got the confidence to then go forward, which then means you're running faster, which then means you're kind of in a race mentality. And then, you know, if you eat well on top of that and maybe take some gels, you know, it's all kind of, cumulative is the right word, isn't it?
Yeah. But do you think you are fitter this year than you've been previously, or is it? It's hard to tell, isn't it? You're not comparing.
I don't have a. I should have one actually, like a set, like, I don't know, a vertical, well, VK or a VK or a vertical 500 meters or something.
Yeah.
And that I've got loads of times on.
Yeah.
Sure, I could work one out that I've done a load, but I think I must be.
Yeah.
Skurvaim, that uphill, that's about a vertical K, isn't it? I did that in...
Yeah, it's a little bit more.
38. I think it was 38 minutes something. Like, that was really pushing on that. And I don't think I could have done that before.
Right.
But I don't actually have a time for it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm pretty sure that I'm running as well as I ever had definitely on long distance, but even on medium distance.
Yeah.
Whether, you know, you mentioned before how when I got the cooling record, which is like 3 hours of effort end to end, but it's only like 12K or something, isn't it?
Yeah, it's short, yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's quite long, isn't it?
it was before when we were discussing it before, when I knew that you were wrecking it.
Okay.
Or I knew you were interested and we discussed it. And you were like expressing doubt as to whether you could do it because it was a really long run. And I remember just thinking, what's he talking about?
But it did feel like that at the time. Like I hadn't even done Jura at that time.
Right, yeah.
And back then, like, Jura felt like, ooh, that's a long way.
Yeah.
And there weren't even that many, like, well, ultra's the wrong word, but like, there weren't sky races in the UK. And like the longest hill races were like Jura, so that was like the longest thing. So I think the goalposts have shift, or not the goalposts, the your sort of perceptions of what's possible have shifted. I mean, the Ramsey round and things have been around, but they were another level.
And I think it's changed as well in that there is more of a fashion of, like, I guess this is the Killian influence, is that the best people in the sport are also doing really long stuff.
Yeah.
So you kind of look to, you know, like, I guess if you were a top fell runner 20 years ago, you'd look at the top fell runners of the day, and the longest races they would do would be like 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah.
Whereas now, if you're a top hill mountain fell hill runner, you look at Killian and a few other people, and the longest races they're doing are like 40 hours or something. Yeah. or the longest efforts they're doing are really, really long. So maybe that shifts the whole perception of what's possible and what's possible without, like, jeopardizing your short race performance, because, you know, Killian obviously is able to do those really long things and then, like, a month later go and win a vertical kilometer or whatever, which is incredible.
I'll have to do a Ben race uphill effort in a few weeks when I'm fully recovered from this Ramsey and see if I can.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how quickly you recover, because I know that I felt like it took me a long time. I can't remember. I'm trying to think. Can you remember when I did it? It was early July, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, that sounds right.
It wasn't the 21st of June, which is the longest day. It was a couple of weeks after that, I think. And then when's the Glencoe Skyline? That's second weekend in September or something.
Yeah.
So it's like 2 months. And I had an entry for the Glencoe Skyline that I didn't use because I didn't feel like I was recovered. So that was 2 months. But yeah, I think you've prepared much better than I was able to. I did like some long runs, but it was definitely on the light side of preparation in terms of ultra distance running. And I think that meant for me that it probably didn't impact my time very much. I think I put in a performance that felt good for me, but it meant I took ages to recover. And it would be interesting to see, like, you've done so much long stuff and in the build-up that hopefully you'll recover quicker.
I think I probably will. I suppose I don't actually know this, but I assume my kind of weekly kilometerage was probably higher than yours was last summer.
I'm sure, yeah, definitely. And mine was like, some weeks it was, you know, I might have got up to like 70 or 80K.
Okay.
But it was quite sporadic, you know, like I'd have a week of busy work plus busy with the kids and it would drop off, or I put my back out, I couldn't run at all for 2 weeks.
I suppose that's been another thing for me. Like, my mileage is not massive. Like, I hit quite a few 100+ K weeks, but, you know, that's not big compared to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And they weren't all as big as that. But in consistency, I don't know what the answer to this is, but with my job and seeing people with colds and viral illnesses and things, I do seem to get quite a lot of mild, very mild, like you can still go running and stuff with them and still sometimes even race with them, but sort of head cold, sinusy things, just viral things.
Yeah.
Which I think probably is definitely an occupational hazard of the work. But so it is the same with being a parent for yourself, which I'm not.
Yeah.
But I think maybe this combination of doing that and trying to train hard and like maybe some stress in work is like not a good combination. So I would quite often get these kind of things that would last a couple of weeks and just mean I had to ease off on the training.
Whereas so this because year, you've been working less and seeing patients
less. People, I mean, everyone's wearing masks and, you know, so there's less of these viral things around. And we were doing a lot more on sort of telephone triage. So, so yeah, I think I was exposed to less of that and was able to kind of keep my training sort of, what do you call, training progression.
Really consistent
and like rest well and eat well and all the rest of it, sleep well.
Yeah.
So that all came well together. And it's interesting because you can never really, well, I can never really point to, well, how much was that specific issue a factor?
It all kind of adds up, doesn't it?
All comes together.
It all adds up to more than it should, I think. It kind of...
Yeah.
Same with when you start running things faster. You know, you think, well, I can go that much faster on each of those bits because I'm that bit fitter. But then there's always a little bit more because that's to do with being psyched, I think. Like,
yeah,
you know, when you know you're running well, it spurs you on. And the same in racing. Like, I remember the first few times I was near the front of a race as like a as like a teenager coming through. And I remember specifically in going to do this race in the Peak District, that was like in the middle of my GCSEs. Like my GCSEs was like 2 weeks, and there was this race in Castleton in on the middle on like the Friday of the first week of my exams. So I'd had like a week of exams and not really done much running. And I went and did this race and I was in like, suddenly I was in the lead group and I'd never been in the lead group of a race before. And it really kind of brought out a much better performance than I would have had. And I think, you know, often the difference, you look at the results and you look at where the winner is and where you are and you think that's a gulf that is insurmountable. But it's not all fitness. Some of that gulf is like the psych of running really well. If you're leading a race, you know you're running really well and it encourages you and makes you perform really well. Whereas if you're in second and feeling a bit ropey,
totally,
you might not be that much less fit, but your men, you know, it's difficult to kind of
psychology.
Get as much out of yourself.
Yeah, even when you're running really well for you, you're still behind the person in first, so you're like, oh, so you feel like, am I running really slow?
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, being in the lead, it definitely, I'm winning the race. It just absolutely psychs you up to run even better.
Yeah, and so you can have that in a round if you know that you're up on the splits.
I was going to say, because I was up on the 15, I was a bit up on the 15-hour, I was up on the 15-hour splits. I think I got 25 minutes ahead of it at one point.
Wow.
But I was definitely up on the, so I had like a bunch, I had my 15-hour splits, I had actually my Taranto round splits, and I had, I didn't actually get your Ramsey splits, but I got
Jasmine's. They're pretty much the same as Jasmine's.
So I thought, well, they're pretty much the same.
Yeah.
So I knew you'd gained a bit in the Grey Corries particularly, hadn't you?
Yeah, but I mean, it's interesting to say that you were 25 minutes up at one point. Like, that's, I was just never, it was not that variable for me. Like, I would gain a small amount of time here and here and a bit more and a bit more and a bit more. Okay. But, like, the most I was ever in front was 8 minutes, I think.
Okay, okay.
You know, so it didn't vary that much.
So I suppose I had this feeling of, I'm 25 minutes up on the 15-hour schedule. It's like, oh, great, I'm kind of winning on the Ramsey round. So that spurs you on.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, like I'd said, it took a long time to be able to visualize it, but when I could visualize it, you know, not once through that whole round did I think of, like, oh, I might drop out or something. I'm sure you didn't either, but that's like half the battle is knowing, well, I'm going to go this distance and it might take.
I never thought I might drop out, but I did think I might not get the record.
Yeah.
But you had a massive cushion, so, you know, you from like Lochtree, you'd have to have a pretty bad leg to miss the record if you're already an hour up, wouldn't you?
I mean, yeah. I mean,
I suppose if you blew up,
up properly and you couldn't run and you couldn't eat,
it could happen actually. Yeah,
you could certainly. Because I can't actually remember. Is that like 7 or 6? I was 9:30 at first set, I think. No, eight. I don't have my splits here actually.
I think I was 10 something. So I think 9:30 would... I don't, anyway, yeah, you're like not quite two-thirds of the way around, I think.
Yeah. So, yeah, it could still go wrong.
It could go wrong, yeah.
But I think, yeah, the visualising, that was just key for me. It was like, okay, well, I'm on not the home stretch, but
yeah,
I know where I'm going. And the other thing, actually, which was interesting, was because I'd done the leg three from first hit back to the finish with John Kelly, obviously he'd done two rounds and all that cycling before that.
Yeah.
And amazingly, he'd still been on his schedule until, I think, the end of leg one in the,
wow,
on the Ramsey.
Yeah.
But then he'd slowed down quite a lot when the weather got horrendous.
Yeah.
And so I'd done that leg with him, you know, like in bad weather, in, you know, pretty, you know, like slowly, because he'd done so much.
Yeah.
And it was really tough because you felt so bad for him because he was suffering so much. And but there, obviously there's like, he can't really do much apart from offer some food or some layers,
yeah,
or try and tell jokes.
Yeah, yeah. So was that helpful, like knowing that you weren't suffering as much as him?
So kind of, like, yeah. I kind of used that to my advantage and was like, well, like he reset for me, like the level of how sleep deprived and like deep in the cave someone could be and still be going.
Right.
I was like, oh wow, I've never hurt anything like that.
Yeah,
I've been deep in that.
Yeah.
So that was like, that was really like a visceral kind of, oh wow. So then I probably use that to my advantage of being okay, like I can still run. I haven't just done two rounds, and you know, I don't feel tired. You know, because the big thing for him was he was just so tired.
He wanted to get to sleep.
Yeah.
20 hours.
So I used that to my advantage, and also the weather was way better for me. Like it was perfect visibility.
Yeah.
It was a touch windier than like I suppose would have been perfect, but then that was quite good because I could just put my jacket on and at least I didn't get too warm.
And you went anti-clockwise, which is the way that I went. It's the way Jasmine went. It's the way John went, who had the record before her. And I think it's the way that
Charlie went that way, didn't he?
I think Charlie went that way, and I think it's the way that Jez Bragg went, who had the record before John.
Okay.
I don't know about the records before that. Was that, did you consider going the other way?
Not really.
And why not?
Not really. Because I did get some, when I was trying to get some split times, I got Nikki Spinks' split times at one point, and she'd done it the other way.
Right.
Well, actually, she probably did it both ways. But anyway, the ones I had with her clockwise.
Yeah.
And we did our schema one clockwise.
Yeah.
Not that the splits would have been that useful, but just for the experience. I didn't really ever consider doing it clockwise. I think whatever way you think psychologically would work, like just go with that, because like the psychology of it's quite important. So getting the memoirs and the out and backs, like the biggest mountain group, getting that done while you're fresh, seems really important.
And also, like, you've done the Tranta that way,
and I've done the Tranta that way,
so kind of it's probably easier for you to visualize, and you probably know the lines a little even better than you would the other way.
Yeah.
I was thinking about it though, because it's probably slightly easier, because if you do it the way we did it, anti-clockwise, I basically just did it that way because that was the way everyone else had done it, and so I had a schedule.
You've got a schedule. Laziness.
It's really like... But and also, I thought it was quite nice to finish on the highest mountain in Britain. That's quite stylish.
Oh, yeah, that's the other thing, is that... So it's great, for us living here, but even just not...
Mm.
Yeah, it's great, the highest mountain in Britain, but also then you're like straight down to the youth hostel and done.
Mm.
Whereas the other way, you've got, I'd have to look on the map, but is it like 4K maybe of kind of flattish,
considerable, yeah,
forestry track running, which is fine when you're just fresh.
Yeah,
but at the end, if you were tight for time.
Yeah, I was wondering about this. So like I was tight for time coming down the bend. I didn't realize I was tight. I had like eight minutes up on the summit, and I somehow lost most of that by halfway down. So then I realised I was tight for time, and I had to put in quite a big effort to get down in record time. It's quite a hard ask to put an effort in on a technical steep descent.
Yeah.
And it's pretty risky as well. Like there's a lot of that terrain where when you're tired, if you trip, and you're going quite fast, you could trip, and you could easily like knock all your front teeth out or something.
You could definitely fluff it on the final descent.
Yeah, like exactly.
The bottom half.
Yeah.
You could definitely, yeah.
And from the top of Heart Attack Hill to the bridge, you know, that like paving really slippy and steep and you're knackered. And I remember getting there and thinking, and I had 5 minutes, and I remember getting there and thinking, I'm sure Finley does hill reps on this hill and it takes him about 5 minutes, in which case I should be able to run down it as fast as he can run up it. But I wasn't sure I wasn't sure that you did hill reps in 5 minutes at all. It was like a vague, almost memory that I had. And but I was wondering about if you went the other way. So what I mean is, descending the bend, it's hard to like up your game.
Yeah, that's true.
When it's needed. Whereas if you're going the other way, you get to the bottom of Moolac and you got like whatever it is, 4 or 5K of like almost flat running, and it's kind of easier to properly empty the tank.
Yeah.
Than it is on the descent of the Ben.
Well, maybe physically easier, but psychologically for me, maybe harder.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, like, I don't know about you, but my tank felt pretty empty by the time I got to the youth hostel. Yeah.
I like someone looked at my split times and they keep saying that I'm not that fast down the bend at the end of even my Tran Tour or my Ramsey.
Yeah.
But like definitely not compared to my race time. Obviously I'm nowhere near it for just the bend race.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I'm like 2 minutes faster than Jasmine's split down.
I think her descent, I mean, I obviously lost a big chunk of time on it. And I think she must have just had an amazing descent.
Yeah.
She
must have been following someone who knew the
Yeah.
Well, I can't use that excuse. So I was with Jasmine on that descent and she was going really well. I was like, blooming hell, she's going well on this final descent.
Yeah, yeah.
But
and you can imagine, you know, like her write-up of it, you know, she can like hear the piper.
Yeah.
And is wondering whether that's for her. She's following you obviously know the best descent, and she's about to smash the overall record, which is a big deal for anyone, but if you're a woman and you're breaking the overall record, that's an even, you know, it's an even bigger deal. You can kind of imagine that euphoric, awesome descent happening. Yeah. It's pretty cool. But I think, yeah, so when you compare your time to it, like you're proportionally not that quick on the descent, but I think that it's because you're comparing it to something that was an inspired final descent, probably.
And I enjoyed the descent and it wasn't slow, but also, like, it's been the same when I've in the Ben Nevis race, actually. Like, the time when I was 5 minutes behind Rob Jebb at the summit, and, like, that's probably my fastest ever descent because I had to just go into turbo to catch him up and get in front of him and win by 14 seconds or something.
Yeah. Whereas, it 5 minutes at the top?
I think it was, pretty much,
Okay. Right.
Whereas I've been leading by 5 minutes at the top
in
the past, more recently, so it just doesn't make sense to do the same, take the same risk on a descent if you're already winning.
Yeah.
And like, you know, because I suppose the more you push it, the closer you are to maybe having a fall.
Yeah.
So it was a bit like that on my Ramsey. I was like, well, I just need a solid descent. I don't need any super fast descents.
The main
like number one thing is get down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Without any injury.
Yeah, which is that's the emotion I had on the summit.
Okay.
Because I thought 8 minutes, there's no way I can lose 8 minutes. And then halfway down, I was like, bloody hell, how am I going to get down? And I think maybe that's part of why I lost that time was that, you know, I got to the summit. I was like, well, I'm not going to lose 8 minutes. And the important thing is just to get down. And I lost that kind of really pushing it feeling that I'd had until then.
And it was starting to get a wee bit dark, wasn't it, for you?
Yeah, I put a head torch on. I'm at Redburn, pretty much, just below Redburn.
So I had a head torch for the first hour and 40 minutes, say.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was on Moolac and Stabban, and like I know those pretty well. I'm not going to say I could do them blindfold, because you always think you know something amazingly, and then there's a bit of cloud and you
get lost.
Getting lost. But no, I know them pretty well, but I don't really tend to run them that much in the dark.
Mm.
I didn't have a big, big head torch, because I knew I'd only need it for a bit. So it wasn't the best. It was new batteries, but it was just a Tika kind of thing.
Mm.
So it definitely, I mean, it felt fast enough, but it's harder to go as fast as you would in daylight. Yeah, it's more effort to go as fast as you would in daylight when it's dark.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and then you said, well, what? You could just wait a few hours and gone fully in the light. And there would have been enough daylight for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I thought it wasn't quite that audacious to be like, well, I'm going solo, unsupported.
I'm not even taking a head touch.
And I'm going to like delay so that it's light. Because I thought, well, you know, if the wheels come off and I do, you know, go slower, it was still quite cool to do a sub 20 hour, you know, solo unsupported. So, so I had a head torch in case for a bit of a backup later on for in the evening as well.
Okay. Okay, so final question. So the record now is solo unsupported, which technically means I've still got the supported record, because normally there's a supported record and an unsupported record, isn't there? And normally the supported record's faster, but this is just a different case. So I've still got the supported record. No, seriously. So if someone comes along and wants to break your record, do you think they have to do it solo unsupported as well? Or do you just end up with a... If they broke it supported, you'd just end up with a two-tier thing again where you had the unsupported record and Joe Bloggs, who had a really heavily supported team effort, had the supported record.
It's a good question. I think for me, I mean, I thought about it quite a bit and I just thought, I think this is the kind of simplicity, this is the style I want to do it in.
Mm.
And I think it's going to suit me quite well. And I did think I had a fairly good shot at the record. I set off with a goal of sub 15, but I didn't know if that was possible. So, you know, 15 and a half or, you know, sub 16 would, you know, whatever would have been enough to have put the record. So I chose to kind of go against, I suppose, the grain of what the history of that round is.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, early on it was, I think most of them were solo unsupported.
Is it? I don't know.
I don't know. Certainly, Martin Stone was solo unsupported, the second completer.
Right.
And actually at the time when he did it, there was still a bit of a tradition of adding more summits.
Yeah.
Because the Tranter used to be the Scottish 24-hour Munro record, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And then that was added to, and Charlie did his Ramsey.
Was the Ramsey then, the one that broke the Tranter record?
I don't know that, actually.
Right.
There might have been something in between.
Yeah.
And then Martin, I think 9 years later maybe, was the second Ramseyist, but he added two Munros over by...
Oh, but he didn't... No, he added them as a different time, I think.
Ah.
I'm not sure, but I think... Because he's listed on the... Ramsey round site as having done the Ramsey round.
Yeah.
The way I understood it was that he did the Ramsey round.
Okay.
And then subsequently did an extended Ramsey
plus with the two extras.
Yeah, I might be wrong on that, but that's what I had always understood.
More recently, like you said, everyone's been supported. So I kind of chose to go against that. So it's kind of my, you could argue, well, it's your own problem if someone comes along with support.
Yeah, someone comes along in 10 years' time when you've started to get slow and takes 10 minutes off your record.
Yeah.
And you're not in a position to break it.
Yeah, that could happen.
Yeah.
Easy. I'm pleased with the way I did it. I don't feel a huge urge to either to go back and do it in the same style right away, because I'm really proud actually of that time. I'm pretty pleased with that.
Yeah.
But neither do I feel like an urge to go and try and, how much can I better it by
with support? Yeah.
And I guess, like you said, if in 10 years' time, or like two, or a year's time, or 6 months' time, I mean, who knows? But if someone comes with support and beats it, I mean, there's a lot of fast young runners who've shown this year that they're good at distance as well.
Yeah.
So, it might not be... You said 10 years first. I'm going to say 6 months. Might just be 6 months because we've got the winter.
6 months would be like February, March.
Okay. Maybe we'll break it on skis.
Maybe we'll break it on skis. Yeah, that'd be good.
No, but however long, someone could come along and I guess they're going to choose whatever style they want.
Yeah.
And
I think that's it. As long as you're honest about it.
I think, that for me is, the absolute key. I mean, one is I'm pleased with how I tried it. So I'm happy with that. And the second thing is, whatever way you do it, just be totally upfront about how you do it, about what support you have. And, you know, because a few people asked me after I'd said solo unsupported, they're like, did you have many food drops?
Yeah, I mean, I presumed that you were going to do it with a drop, with someone meeting you at the two places that are easy to be met.
And that would be easy to do.
And initially, I remember talking to you about it in the summer. That was what you were planning, I think, wasn't it? Was to have someone meet you at first.
I thought that maybe at the
railway.
Makes sense. And then I thought, I kind of like the aesthetic. If I'm basically doing it unsupported, why don't I just carry a few extra bars?
Yeah.
And
it wouldn't actually save you that much weight.
No.
Maybe save you half a kilo or something.
Yeah, yeah.
That's significant, but it's nice to have done it properly pure.
Well, if I'd had static food stashes, I would have needed to say that's what I had. Like,
yeah, of style. Course. Yeah.
So, yeah, I am pretty happy with how that went.
But cool.
I think someone else may have a different approach.
Yeah, great. Well, congratulations again. It's awesome. It's good to see.
Thanks very much.
Nice to talk about it.
Yeah, and for obviously all the support. Yeah, well, reliving yours, but I mean, I didn't really support yours, but I did run the first summit with you.
Oh, you did? Yeah.
Before I went off to Glamorgan.
Yeah, you could have supported me on the last descent, and I might have been a bit less tight.
But it was great I think it's great to be involved, and I don't know if you felt this, but I feel, I mean, not the club sense with a capital C, but just I've kind of joined the group of people. There's only 100 and... I'm 182, and there's two more since me on the site who all had like different experiences, but all on the same route.
Yeah, everyone's had a pretty memorable experience on it.
We can definitely, it's definitely a talking point that we can all relate to.
Yeah.
And it feels quite cool to be part of that.
Yeah. And to be, you know, it's nice to be part of the history of it, to have had the record. And it's cool to see it moving on. It's interesting, I remember... I think a lot of what is possible is down to perception. I was talking to you about this before you broke the record, but I remember when I was like mid-20s talking to Adrian Davis about the Ramsey record, and I can't remember why, because I wasn't interested in doing the summer record at that point. I was interested in trying to do it in winter in under 24 hours, but him saying something about how I think at the time Adrian Belton had the record, and he said something about how it was really tough, really impressive time, and Adrian's time was like 18:23 or something. And so at the time,
which did stand for a long time,
which stood for a long time, ages. And it's a good time, obviously, but
like, didn't that stand for like, oh, I'd be making it up, but it was like, could be over a decade or.
Yeah, I think it might be more than that. But you know, so if I'd gone at the age of 25, say, after having that conversation with Adrian Davis, if I'd gone to try and break the Ramsey Round record then, I probably would have aimed for like a bit faster than Adrian Belton ran it. And when you don't have experience of doing these long things, you know, it was the first time I'd ever done anything longer than like 9 hours or 10 hours. You don't really know what pace to run at. And I was kind of running at Jasmine splits because they were what I had and it felt really fast. But like if I'd done it as a 25-year-old, you know, I was pretty much as good a runner as I was last year. I would have probably aimed for like, I don't know, 20 minutes faster than Adrian Belton. So a lot of what you're capable of, I think, is set by what's gone before and your perception of that.
It's like the pound coin, standing on the shoulders of giants.
Yeah, why is that the pound coin?
I think it's on the, is that not on the side of a coin?
Maybe, yeah.
It's a £2.
Yeah, okay. So like, you know, even if, you know, like, it's maybe not such a good example, but for other rounds where, like, runners who would be a similar standard to you in like a Ben race, for example. So like, for example, the Mamours round, like Colin Donnelly, who's obviously a class act at races, his Mamours round was like 7 hours something, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And we'd both run considerably faster than that. But I think you're, because he had the record, the Mamours record, before you broke it. And that, you know, that kind of perception shift, suddenly everyone realizes, well, hold on, Finley's beaten Colin's time by like 2 hours, so maybe I can go and beat Colin's time, kind of thing.
And I haven't talked to Colin about that, but I wonder. So we did a slightly different route because he included one of the Munro tops. Well, yeah. The only Munro top, but that would only add 5 minutes, I think.
He probably just wasn't going very hard.
I think basically it wasn't really a thing to go and do these full out race efforts.
Yeah, he was probably like on a steady.
Yeah, I think it was probably
a fast-ish run,
like a tempo run.
Yeah,
And it wasn't really a thing to go and do these. So yeah, and now obviously we've got, I suppose, better race nutrition and things like that. Whether how much of that's in factor, but I think basically he probably wasn't doing it as an all out race effort like I was.
Yeah. But yeah, it's interesting to. I think it's interesting to look at those historic times and say, well, you know, for me, because I remember having that conversation with Adrian Javis, like, it's interesting that if I'd set out to break the record then I probably would have run like an hour and a half slower than I ended up running, purely based on like what I perceived was possible.
Like, also someone could say to you, well, could you have ran any faster?
And
like,
yeah,
it's like, well, it's really hard to know because like at any one point in that almost 15 hours for me, like, yeah, I could have pushed a bit harder on a section.
Yeah.
But how, if you do that too much, presumably you might run out of juice.
Yeah. Yeah,
so,
exactly, yeah.
I mean, what's, yeah, how much, yeah, we don't really know, I suppose, the full limit, because by definition, I suppose, if everyone was trying to reach the full limit, there'd be like people bonking out of, you know, like
getting to Calmore Jarrigan
in the marathon.
Calum Hawkins.
So we talked about this. This is interesting actually. Like Calum Hawkins. So
you watch him and you think, I've never tried anywhere near that hard in any race ever.
Commonwealth Marathon, wasn't it? In Australia. So super heat.
Yeah.
But he was just so on the edge, and he almost got away with it. Like trying that hard and being that. Trying to think of the right PC word. That screwed. And you can't get like that in the mountains because you risk your death. It'd be like that on the Carmel Jaggerette. No way.
No one ever gets like that in the mountains.
So
I've seen people get like that
unless you haven't slept for
I've seen people get like that on the road, the last 3 mile road section on Jura, but that's a bit different, isn't it?
So that's quite interesting. I mean, now that you said that thing about perceptions, I'm like, oh, maybe I could go a bit faster.
Better go and do it next
I would
weekend.
Love to go and do it again. It was just such a great, like, classic day out in these mountains that are great. So, I mean, I could feasibly see me doing it again. Mm. Definitely interested in our sub-24 Schemo.
Yeah.
Ramsey, that would be...
Yeah,
that'd be high on the list for next winter.
Yeah, I'm trying to get fit again after lockdown to try and have that as a feasible option.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks very much for talking to me on your podcast. I really enjoyed that.
Thanks for having me.
Cool. Right. Anything else we need to do?
I'll just say that's the end, folks. I'm gonna take over.
Okay.
Oh, you can do it.
All right. That's the end of this podcast, folks. Listen up for a future one on. I don't know what it will be about, but I'm sure it'll be great.
GoMountainGoats.com.
Brilliant.